Ladies and gentlemen, the Civil Service Board meeting for September 22nd, 2015 is now called to order. I would ask you all please to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next, we'll have our roll call.
All right. Chairman Dennis Reichert.
Here.
Vice Chair Curtis Stout.
Here.
Commissioner Dan Carlone is absent excused. Commissioner Evelyn Alexander.
Present.
And I would also like to welcome our newest commissioner, just appointed last night, Commissioner Jeanette Avila.
Here. Thank you.
Also present, we have Henry Impeño with the City Attorney's Office.
Our first item for today is public comments, item AA. Would anyone like to make a comment at this time? I don't see any takers. Moving on. Item AB, approve agenda additions. I don't believe we have any additions today.
No agenda additions.
Next, we'll have our consent calendar. I would ask for a motion that consent calendar items A1 through A3 be adopted. Would any of the commissioners like to pull any of the items for discussion? I'd ask for the motion.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes unanimously. That ends the consent calendar for today. Our next item is item A4, a request by Stephen D. Sanchez, Gaspard Castillo Harper, APC, to utilize a hearing officer in the matter of the dismissal of appellate P1506-3 and continue the appeal hearing scheduled on October 13th, 14th, and 15th, 2015. I would like to hear from our Chief Counselor on this issue.
So we received a request from Mr. Sanchez in keeping with the MOU for police safety to have a hearing officer hear the case that is scheduled to be heard before the Civil Service Board in October. And that's the request before us today. And we actually have representatives from Mr. Sanchez's office, Casey Castillo, here to present the reasons for this request at this point in time.
I would like to hear from our counselor also.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a request that has not come before this Civil Service Board, to my knowledge, to date. Board has, obviously, the authority under the charter of the City of San Bernardino to hear the appeal in this matter. P1506-3, in fact, is scheduled for the three dates in October. My recommendation, Mr. Chairman, is that we get the police department's response to the request. But before doing that, I wanted to outline to the board that in going over the charter sections, I wanted just to advise the board, if you look at the charter provisions that are attached to your packet, at page C-47 in section 255, it talks about the appeal of an employee who was suspended, reduced in rank, or dismissed from a department by the city manager or head of the department or by any other authorized supervisor may appeal the decision of such officer to the Civil Service Board, and such board shall define the manner, time, and place by which such appeal shall be heard. The judgment of such board shall be final. That is in the charter of the city. You have attached also to the backup a copy of the memorandum of understanding, the contract between the city and the police officers association. And it talks on page 10, I believe it's been highlighted by the chief examiner for your review. On page 10 of that, in section 6, if the Civil Service Board determines that disciplinary evidentiary appeals should be heard by a third party neutral, the city and the association will support that procedure. That's the current language in the current memorandum of understanding. As I understand it, there's a new memorandum of understanding that's being negotiated now, and certain deal points have been agreed to by the city and by the association, but the final new memorandum of understanding has not been approved yet. And so this is the language that you have that's before you. These are the two authorities that you're dealing with. If the board, in its discretion, agrees to refer this to a hearing officer, the hearing officer does not substitute for the civil service board. It makes, adheres the matter. It hears an evidentiary hearing, hears testimony from witnesses, makes a decision, basically a recommendation to this board. The matter will come back to the civil service board with that hearing officer's decision for the board's review. And you'll be reviewing the written documents that the hearing officer relied on. I don't know if there'll be a transcript of the hearing, of the testimony that you'll have before you at that time. But you have the authority when it comes back to the civil service board to accept, reject, or to modify the hearing officer's decision. You could accept the hearing officer's decision, the findings, and disagree with the actual disciplinary action that the hearing officer decides. That's part of the modification. If you reject the hearing officer's decision, you can rehear the matter. You can call basically the same witnesses that the hearing officer considered, and as if the hearing officer's decision of the process didn't take place. You have all of that before you. So obviously there's an issue of costs to the city. As part of this consideration today, you may wish to discuss with the parties whether the parties are willing to share in the costs of that hearing officer. At times, there's an equal sharing of costs, 50-50 sharing of costs that could take place. It could save the city costs in the long run if the board was to accept the hearing officer's decision without having to go through the time-consuming process of having a hearing before this board. But at the same time, if you reject the hearing officer's decision and wish to rehear the matter, then obviously those costs aren't saved. So all those are for your consideration. And so I think at this time, with the chair's permission, it might be appropriate to get the police department's response to the request.
Thank you very much, Mr. Impino. Captain Moss?
Sir.
Would you please let us know how the police department feels on this issue?
The department has absolute faith in the objectivity of the board. And by the MOU, we are willing to defer to your discretion. It is your discretion. But our history has been that we have been satisfied with the outcome of the board's decision in prior cases and willing to go forward with the board.
Thank you very much, Captain. And Mr. Sanchez, representative, please.
Good morning. My name is Casey Castillo. I am here on behalf of Mr. Sanchez. He is in criminal court this morning. The negotiations that have taken place for the upcoming MOU that would replace the current MOU state that the member will have the option of requesting a hearing officer in the upcoming, in the future. And so this is something that I suppose the commission will end up having to address occasionally going forward. In this present matter before the board, we are dealing with a termination case, and the matter before the board also has issues that are important to this particular appellant because there are issues that involve the peace officer's Bill of Rights. Mr. Sanchez feels that it is important that a hearing officer that has the experience and the training involving the Peace Officer Bill of Rights hear this matter. The experience of, well, let me back up. when we request neutral hearing officers from the State Mediation and Consolation Board, they are those who have specific training in dealing with disciplinary matters regarding peace officers and firefighters, and have specific training in dealing with hearings for disciplinary matters. They come off lists from industry-wide. They're pulled from the ERB, all kinds of, I mean, I have no idea where they get them, but they're from the personnel list. Public Employee Relations Board is where we typically get the list. The cost comes from the employee. We split it with the Legal Defense Fund. As to your concerns regarding the costs, the union does split those costs with the city. Typically, when the hearings go before the boards, it is a cost that is borne by the city. In this particular case, because it is one of a first impression, and I understand that it is one where the union has not solidified the specifics with the MOU, and that actually was not completely, I would say, delineated in the terms of the MOU. I don't see where the and I think we would have to speak about that, but there is specific language in the Ontario case, and I'm sure the city attorney knows which case I'm speaking about. So I would say that the cost would be borne by the city, and that is something that we could potentially work out in advance, where there would be a fee splitting in terms of the hearing officer. I know that Mr. Sanchez would request that there would be a court reporter for a termination case. That would also be something that could potentially be shared. But for this case, I know that the continuance that is requested would be because Mr. Sanchez is potentially going to be in a criminal trial on October 13th, 14th, and 15th. The necessity for the continuance is also because if we do request, or because we are requesting the neutral hearing officer to get a list from the State Mediation and Consolation Services, is approximately a two-week process. We get the list, we would have to do the strike process. The strike process would then give us the one hearing officer. From there, we would have to do the scheduling, depending on the availability of that individual, would potentially cause scheduling issues depending on their popularity. I know that, and I can speak to this, this particular appellant is currently working, so pushing it out is not something that is a problem for this individual, so that's okay. But in terms of going forward, I think that there is some pluses and advantages to the commission and to the city to going forward with a neutral hearing officer. I think that, and especially for the appellant in this case, given the statutory objectives that are going to be present from this side, I don't think that having a neutral hearing officer is something that should be taken lightly.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Antonio.
Mr. Chairman, if I may just add some comments. I wanted to advise the board, in particular for the new commissioner. You can see from the documents before you, there is no identification of the name of this police officer, this employee. It's referred to only as P1506-3. That's because of the confidentiality requirements in the state laws and what you call POBAR, Peace Officers Bill of Rights. This is an open hearing at this point of this board when we ever do get into the actual hearing of an appeal of a police officer, there's the opportunity to have a closed hearing and not have any members of the public be present. So, but as long as we're maintaining the confidentiality requirements, we can still have this discussion, and I appreciate counsel not talking about facts of the appeal in this. But you have before you today, then, a decision of whether to grant the request of referring this to a hearing officer. It appears that the department and the appellant are in a agreement to do that. My recommendation would be, if the board is agreeable to referring this to a hearing officer, that you allow the parties to meet and confer, if they haven't done it already, I'm assuming, to come back to the board with a selection of that hearing officer based on your joint discussions of the panel that you wish to select from, and to have that hearing officer selected. And the board could give them a time frame of which you want the hearing to take place, and the matter brought back to this board if there's a problem with coming up with that, accomplishing that time
Henry?
Frame, then you may want to then delay the matter and you can bring it back again, since apparently there is no time constraint from the appellant's perspective.
I'd just like to note that there is an objection by the department. There was never an agreement to go through this third-party neutral. The department indicated only that they would submit to whatever the decision discretion of the civil service board
was. Okay, I apologize. I misheard, and I thought that there was. Okay, so there isn't an agreement. You have any objection to the board referring the matter?
We've found that the board has fulfilled its role in being objective in the hearings that we brought forward to it at this point, and have full faith in the decisions made by the board.
Well, I serve at the will of the board, so I want to hear what the board has to say.
Well, I understood the captain that they weren't necessarily in favor of or opposed to it, but they were comfortable with the board continuing as we have in the past. One of the concerns I have is that if we go with a hearing, that hearing officer still refers his decision or her decision back to us, and we accept, reject, or modify, and yet we haven't heard any of the evidence, and I'm not comfortable with a hearing officer. I'm sorry. That's just my opinion.
Commissioner Stout?
My question was, is that if we go with the hearing officer, that's going to be in lieu of a hearing. Am I correct?
Not completely. The hearing officer will conduct an evidentiary hearing. We'll hear testimony by witnesses, and that that record and the documents and the decision, the findings and the decision of that hearing officer will come back to this board, and the board can then decide whether it wants to rehear the testimony and conduct basically a hearing de novo of the entire matter. So you do still have that authority to do that.
But that would be after the hearing.
The other hearing, not a hearing with us.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It would be after the independent hearing, so to speak.
Right, after the hearing officer comes back to you with a decision, then you can decide whether you want to review the transcript, the tape recordings of that hearing, and the documents that were produced, and from that decide whether you want to rehear any of those witnesses. Obviously, there's an issue of credibility of witnesses that any person making a decision, a judge, a hearing officer, this board has to make. And so there's issues of whether you want to rehear the matter at that point, and that's within your discretion.
Commissioner Alexander.
Henry mentioned that, you know, the possibility of listening to, you know, or reading the transcript, or possibly hearing the transcript. And by doing that type of thing, we miss out on body language of a witness, and body language tells a lot. And I just am really uncomfortable with with the hearing officer. Sorry.
Historically, civil service commissions are put in place to represent the community and not specifically the legal issues that are involved. And that's a very important piece of what we do here. That's why we're laymen in these particular positions. However, since we do have the option of looking back at this after it's over, that's another consideration. Another of my considerations would be fairness in the cost of this issue. If indeed the city and the representatives for Mr. Sanchez decided to bear the cost equally, that would be a possible cost savings for the city.
Unless we had to hear it over again.
Unless we had to hear it over again, which is also our option, and then it becomes more costly. So there we are. So this is pretty much up to the board, and I'm going to leave it to you, and I'm going to go with the majority of what you think.
I move that we decline having a hearing officer.
Do I have a second?
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. We also have another issue on here. Shall we continue this since Mr. Sanchez isn't going to be available?
I would like to be heard on that as well before you make a decision.
Indeed.
The city has one witness that is no longer a city employee and has indicated that he will not be available the 13th through the 15th. He is available the following week of October. That would be the week being, I believe, on the 19th. And he is not available the last week in October. He will be available the entire month of November. So I did want to make the board aware of that. He will probably be the first or second witness that the city calls.
I don't have the calendar availability for Mr. Sanchez other than those three dates. So is there a way that we can, if what you're saying is those dates are not working for you either, can we potentially have that scheduling issue resolved between?
Can I suggest, are you able to communicate with Mr. Sanchez or his secretary to obtain his calendar?
Well, I know that Mr. Sanchez is in trial, or right now in trial, so I don't know what his schedule will be based on his trial calendar right now. If you're going to continue the matter, definitely beyond what is contained right now, is there a way to...
When would he be available to provide us scheduling so that we could actually solidify dates for a hearing? Because our next regular meeting would not be until October 13th, and you'd indicated that he will not be available then. Would there be somebody that would be available to provide that information at that time?
And who's not available the following week? 27th.
The city won't be, one of the witnesses for the city will not be available until November,
until
I believe council said.
He is available the week after the 13th, the week of the 13th, but he is not available the last week of October.
That's where our regular meeting would be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I'm with you.
Yes. So you're saying the week of the 19th then is what you want?
That is the week that he is available, yes.
So you want
the 20th?
Is available.
The
week of the 19th.
The 20th.
Yes, so it would be the week of the 19th.
Maybe after next year.
So we're looking at the week of the 19th. And how does that look for the board?
I have a doctor appointment, but I can adjust it. It's Wednesday afternoon, the 21st, but I think I can reschedule.
So it would be the 20th through the 20th.
It would possibly be starting on Monday, depending on availability, somewhere between the 19th and the 22nd. And then we would have to confirm room availability, but I can work on that separately.
I do anticipate this hearing will take at least 3 days, and I am currently scheduled for a deposition on that Thursday of the week of the 20th, so it may be better to go, if we can't start this hearing on a Monday, if we can schedule it for the first week of November or later.
Well, Monday would be a council meeting, so we couldn't go in the council chambers.
No, you would not be able to be in council chambers.
Well, maybe it'd be better just to go in November.
around the first week in November, or the second week in November, with our regular meeting.
The 10th would be the regular meeting.
That may not work for the department. Captain Moss has just indicated he's out of town the second week of November.
Got you.
I just would like to draw the board's attention to the fact that Officer or Mr. Dillon's attorney has indicated that he is currently working, as well as the department is not currently paying his salary. So there is no cost to the city to continue these hearings out further.
So we're looking now at possibly November 23rd?
Mr. Chairman, was there a problem with November 2nd? That is a councilman date, but we will hold the hearing, I'm assuming, here in this room. So,
if we're able to get the space, I can confirm that, but we could tentatively schedule it for that, and if we need to make adjustment, we could.
November 2nd.
So we're not looking at the 20th, yeah?
That you said your witness wouldn't be available on that week of the 20th?
My witness is not available the week of the 13th. I am available the week of the 20th. However, I have a deposition scheduled for the 21st, two of them that I anticipate will take all day. And I think that this hearing will go at least 3 days. So out of an abundance of caution, I would suggest setting it for a later date than that week.
It's so much better if we can schedule the days all together.
It's hard to
pick it up 2 weeks later, or even, you know, a week later when you've heard some testimony, and then we've done that. It's not the ideal situation, I don't think. So we're looking at the first week in November?
First week in November, Monday through Thursday.
9, 10, 11, and possibly 12. That would be...
No,
the second, third,
gotcha. Fourth, and possibly the fifth if it were necessary.
Okay. Gotcha.
Will that room work for Mr. Sanchez's?
I'm texting him, but he's not responding because he's bored. I'm trying to get all of them.
We're talking 9 o'clock rather than 9:30 because we won't have a council.
Yes, indeed, it will be 9 o'clock.
Yeah, we won't be having a board meeting.
So, all 4 days. Mm-hmm. Well, with that tentative schedule, we have a matter on the table, item A4. We have a motion and a second. And all in favor?
Aye.
I believe it passed. Okay, thank you very much. So with that.
I'm sorry, what was the date?
The dates
are November 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and possibly the 5th.
If Mr. Sanchez is not available, there will be an attorney from Wade. Let me verify something. If Mr. Sanchez is not available, I will do the hearing.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you so much, Ashley.
Thank you.
Captain. Moving on to item A5, correspondence. Do we have any correspondence today?
There is no correspondence today.
Next we have item A6, Charter Review Committee consideration of charter sections related to civil service, including but not limited to charter section 246 through 261 with the exception of 260.
So I may
Chief
open.
Examiner.
Okay. Thank you. So if I may open, we talked briefly about the direction that the Charter Committee is going at our last meeting. And I since then had an opportunity to speak with Kathy Staniford with Management Partners. She is working closely with the Charter Committee in their efforts to make a recommendation to council. And she was gracious enough to join us this morning to address the board, provide you with a status update of what's going on with the Charter Committee, and certainly hear any concerns that you may have. And then she will be following up with a more detailed interview and meeting with our chairman following this meeting today. So with that, if I may introduce Kathy, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I've been providing the professional consultant report, support to the Charter Committee since the beginning of July. And some of you may have watched the committee's progress report with the council last night, but just for the record, in case you didn't, the Charter Committee has been working on developing recommendations that will come back to the mayor and common council regarding a new or substantially revised charter. The committee is, you know, nine members, one appointed by each of the common council members, plus two appointees from the mayor. They meet twice a month. They're meeting tonight, as a matter of fact. So today is all day San Bernardino for me. And the reason why the Charter Committee is doing this is because one of the elements that was highlighted in the city's bankruptcy plan and the plan to recover from bankruptcy is that the nature of the charter and the structure of governance that's set forth by the charter has, not just our opinion, but others' opinion, contributed to some of the governance issues that in turn contributed to the bankruptcy. And so what we see when we look at the charter is multiple reporting relationships for certain people. We see an attempt at checks and balances, which more or less don't work all that well. We see some unique characteristics, and it's every city is unique, don't get me wrong, but there are some times where those unique characteristics make a city such an outlier that it contradicts or is not consistent with best practices. And so the Charter Committee has been looking at how to improve the governance structure for the city of San Bernardino, and the approach they're taking is not to look at the current charter and ask what's wrong with it and how do we fix it. Instead, they're taking the opposite view. They're looking at what do modern-day charters have in the way of best practices. What are the best practices for governing a city like San Bernardino? And what should a charter based upon those best practices say? And so they have intentionally sort of set aside what the charter currently says for the most part up to this point. And so they have gotten to the point where they've pretty well developed preliminary recommendations about the overall governance structure, and you may have heard that some of those last night. So for example, they are going to recommend that San Bernardino follow a council manager form of government, not a strong mayor form of government. Currently the city is a hybrid of the two. So they also are going to recommend that the roles and responsibilities of the common council and the mayor and some of the other officials be more clearly defined in the charter, and they're using some resources for that. They're going to recommend, at least until they get other information that says otherwise, their preliminary recommendation is that the mayor have full voting authority. Currently the mayor can only break ties, can only veto actions if it's a 4-3 decision by the common council. The common council has override powers over the mayor. The mayor can also also make things vetoed just by not taking action on certain things. Those are checks and balances or examples of checks and balances that the common perception based upon our interviews is that they just don't work very well. Perhaps the boldest thing that the committee is preparing to recommend is that the number of wards be changed so that when the mayor, if the mayor has a full vote, you don't have an even number of elected officials. They've realized that there's a problem when you have an even number of elected officials with ties and how that basically brings everything to a stop, and that's not in the public's interest either. And so they've also made some decisions about the role of the city manager, how the city manager should be appointed, and some other kind of big recommendations are that the city attorney and city clerk be appointed, not elected positions. It's pretty consistent with best practices. And that the city treasurer, the charter not really say anything about the city treasurer. It's a function that is more commonly performed within a finance department today, not by an individual, and certainly not by an elected individual. There's, I think, slightly more city treasurers than there are city attorneys who are elected in the state of California. There are only 11 elected city attorneys in the state of California, and there's a really good reason for that. So that's sort of where the committee is at. Now they're focusing their attention on departments and other agencies and how, to what extent those should be reflected in the charter. Their preliminary thought, as of their meeting last week, was that the charter should say as little as possible about departments. And the reason for that is that when we look at modern era charters, charters created in the last 50 years or so, versus charters that were created more than 100 years ago, which is the case for San Bernardino, we see two very different things. For cities that have more modern charters, the charters are documents of limit. So they tend to be much shorter, they're streamlined, they tend to be much easier to understand, certainly for the public to understand. And really what they set forth is, the approach is that the city can do what it wants to as long as the charter says it can't. That's why it's a charter of limits. And so that provides maximum flexibility to the elected and appointed officials to make changes, change the number of departments, change fees, change some of the laws, when community needs drive that, as opposed to waiting for the next election cycle to have the voters try to approve that. Charters more than 100 years ago were created in a time where the prevailing wisdom was they needed to be charters of authority. So in those days, anything that a city wanted to be able to do had to be in the charter. And in those days, that predates the advent of city management as a profession, the advent of municipal law as a profession, the advent of, you know, local government professions. The first city manager didn't come on the scene until 1911. So that gives you an idea of how San Bernardino's charter kind of predates all that and why some of those things that are in your charter are there. So the committee, part of their approach is to be not only transparent about what they're looking at, but to do outreach to those entities, agents, boards, commissions, who are potentially impacted by their work, because the committee is very, very interested in hearing the perspective of those potentially affected entities. And so I was asked by the committee to do a series of interviews. I've interviewed all the elected officials. I've interviewed many of the department heads. I had an opportunity to meet with Rebecca last week. And I've also had conversations with the water department, the library board, those other entities who have some reference in the charter today. And so that's really why I'm here. And so the charter committee would like to hear from you collectively and as well as through your chair what your perspective is to help inform their deliberations about what, if anything, about the civil service and the civil service board should be in the charter. One more thing for context, and then I'm here really to listen. We have been looking at best practices. We've been reviewing the charters of 17 other cities who have population size that's somewhat comparable to San Bernardino, between 150 and 400,000. And that research shows sort of a mixed bag when it comes to civil service and civil service boards. We find that in some cases, typically in much older charters like San Bernardino, there is a specific reference to a civil service board, or there's specific reference to a civil service system. In other cases, even older charters, there isn't one. It's been removed, or it's been moved into the municipal code. I'd say it is universal practice for cities, particularly in California, to follow what you refer to as a civil service system, a process of recruiting, testing, and appointing employees based upon merit and experience, not based upon cronyism. That's the standard today. Some charter cities do not have a civil service board, so they don't have a board of appeals. Some do, like San Bernardino. And some cities have a civil service or personnel board, it's sometimes called, but the role is primarily focused on hearing appeals of disciplinary action. The role is not involved in, as much in classification or recruitment and testing. Instead, those functions have been delegated to a personnel or human resources department. So there's a lot of options that are out there. And so really the key questions that I think the board would like to hear from you is, what is your perspective on what should the charter continue to reference a civil service board, or should it be, would it be okay for that to be moved to the municipal code? What are your thoughts about that? And then I think they'd also be interested in what your thoughts are about your roles and responsibilities as a board. You know, should you continue to have sort of the broader role that sometimes seems to overlap or need to be integrated and collaborated with the human resources department, or should your role be a little more narrowly defined to being an independent quasi-judicial hearing body? And then they're also interested in anything else you have to say about the charter and the work we're doing. So I will be quiet and listen to you.
I'll start first. Okay. And what I'd like to make very clear is this board has so much in common with the Charter Review Committee, mm-hmm. because it's a board that is appointed by the community to represent the community. And it took many years for civil service to get in that position, starting from ancient China all the way up. I mean, General Grant tried to have it done when he became president. Impossible. Even Theodore Roosevelt, they tried to get these into cronyism and nepotism. That was the name of the game. And I think, just like with the Charter Review Committee, that this board performs the same function they're performing right now, representing the community and making sure there's a fair and level playing field for all the employees in this city and for the administration that works with those employees. And if indeed the Charter Committee is taking the charter all the way down to a skeleton, to me, the most important thing about the Civil Service Commission is one of the first things we should put back into that skeleton is a heart, and that is fairness. Because if we don't have that, especially with a strong city manager that makes all the appointments, say, to human resources, and they have the ability of appointing whoever they want. I mean, you get back to the council. What if you have a gang of four on the council who want to go a certain way? They have all the power, and there's no checks and balances. There's no individual committee that can say, hold it, we're part of the community here, and you don't tell us what to do. We work together for the betterment of this city. And that's why I think this board is important. Other commissioners? Commissioner Alexander.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I'm really going to be telling you my age. I came on board with the city before we had civil service. I had heard there was an opening in the library. I walked in, I put my application in, the head librarian interviewed me right then. I was hired. That was before civil service. And then that was in 56, before some of you were born. But then I think it was in 59, civil service came on board, and then as I was promoted up, then I had to go through all the testing process because of civil service. And I know that this type of thing could be in HR, and the role could be by ordinance, but ordinances can be changed by a majority of the council, not by a vote. And then I had another thought, too. I made a couple notes. And like Dennis said, keeping the politics out of appointments, and if in fact the civil service, the charter committee, quote, does away with the civil service department and chief examiner type of thing and assigns it, or, you know, in their thinking would be part of HR, I definitely think we need to have the board for hearing, appeals. And we need to have that representation from the public for these appeals. That's my thought. You know, I really feel that it needs to be in the charter, because if it's in an ordinance, it can be changed by a majority of the council. And then the public has no say, other than to go to a hearing and object, but, you know, the majority of the council could override any one person's objection, as we saw last night.
Yeah. Curtis?
Again, I agree with both of you. I think I would like to see the civil service continue to be in the charter. I think it's very meaningful in doing that. I've been on this board now quite a while, and I have seen the purpose of the board to be fairness and in the employment and also in promotions. And whereas when I first came on, I didn't see that in the hiring practices with the city. It was, as Dennis talked about, nepotism and a few more other good old boy type of attitudes.
Had to know somebody.
You had to know someone, or you had to be a relative of someone in order to get hired. And I think it brought in that part of fairness, because it was, and we would talk about sometime in the racial issues that was part of the hiring practices in San Bernardino at that time.
For sure.
And I think with the board, it brought some fairness in that area also. That's why I'm a proponent that we need to keep it within the charter. Now, if we want to separate those areas that may be conflicting with HR, or may be done by HR, or may be duplicated by HR, we may want to look at that. But I think the board in itself plays a role of being fairness and to make sure that the hiring practices and the promotion practices, classification practices, is done fair.
Hearings.
Jeanette?
Well, I agree with what you said about having the heart. We need to keep that, and that is, you know, being new to the board and learning things right now, but I do agree, because that is one of the reasons why I consider being part of this board, because I believe very strongly in the concept of having heart and being bringing things back to that point of being fair and being representing not only the city, but also the people that work for the city. So with that note, I'll leave it at that.
I would just like to make a little caveat to what was said here. I think it's very important for the chief examiner to be appointed by the board rather than the city manager. Because if you have a city manager appointing everybody in human resources, including our representative, then you would lose that independence of being able to make decisions without pressure being put from somewhere else on you.
I agree.
There's already enough pressure with the budgeting. I mean, we know who controls the purse strings right now. And that's the actual reality of this. But that little bit of ability to stay separate and independent gives us more of that ability to represent the community and the people out in our community who we serve, and the employees and the administration, all as one board. Just like the Charter Review Committee right now, they're in that same position. They're not appointed by independent wards. Like this ward system, you may have one person that represents one ward that has 150 people voting for them, and another person who represents another ward who has thousands of people voting for them, and they all have the
same say
on the council.
Well, that they are appointed by ward. There is a representative for each of the wards, but like you, they don't see their role as being beholden to the ward from which they're appointed by. They see their role as being representing the community as a whole. And that's because that's their defined role.
Kathy, we're not appointed by the council people. We're all appointed by the mayor. All five of us are by the mayor.
With the concurrence of the council.
Yes, yeah.
Uh-huh. I would submit council people at large would be a wonderful way to have democratic representation in this city.
You know, I appreciate that perspective. I will tell you, though, that the chances of that happening are unlikely.
In this
part, not just because of that, but because there is a strategic and deliberate attempt to move all cities towards voting by district or by ward based upon the principles of equal representation of ethnic minorities. And so when you Highlands, you're most close to closest example, but I can name off half a dozen that are in the process of either have converted to voting by district instead of at large, or in the process of going through that because they've been sued. So it's not about San Bernardino, it's the trend.
I understand it happened years ago, 50 years ago. Actually in the late 60s is when it began. And it became a real issue, and indeed it is. Yeah. Commissioner Alexander.
I have a question regarding the council. I didn't quite understand with the mayor, being a voting member. Will the mayor be, the charter committee recommending the mayor still be elected citywide?
Yes.
They didn't emphasize that, and I was still wondering, if it's citywide, then if it was by ward, then, the ward could then have two reps. No, it was just a question on that.
Yeah, no, they are recommending that the mayor continue, and again, these are all preliminary recommendations.
Sure, yes.
That the mayor continue to be elected at large. Mm-hmm. The reason why they feel pretty strongly that the mayor should have an equal vote is that they felt it's really odd to have an elected official be elected by the plurality of the community and not be able to have a voice.
Yeah.
And that the role of the mayor is much more important than merely representing the city on regional boards, and that the mayor ought to have a voice in the actual policy making and legislation of the city. And the domino effect of that, though, given your current structure, is they deliberated probably three meetings on this one issue of should the mayor have a vote. And once they've said, well, this is the most important thing, then they had to deal with, well, what's the effect of all that?
So in reality, some ward is going to have two people that live in that ward. The mayor will be from a ward, and the council person will be from that ward.
You have that today.
But the mayor doesn't get to vote today.
Well, I understand that, but again, one of the other important elements of the charter skeleton, quite honestly, is the committee is focused on pulling in from the operating practices for good government, which the elected officials and the city attorney and the city manager all signed in April, a clarification of roles and responsibilities. And one of the critical ones that they have recommended be included in the charter is that the role of council members is to first and foremost represent the interests of the city as a whole and not a particular geographic area or special interest. And so, those hopefully taken together will address some of the issues. The other thing I would say is that there's a natural tendency to think in terms of what should be based upon the personalities and the individuals that are in office today, or the individuals that were in office during your memory.
Yeah.
And what I would just point out is I don't really care what you come up with, but it's your neutral consultant, is that really the purpose of the charter is to stand the test of time. And the reality is that despite some of the problems that San Bernardino has had, there are numerous examples of city managers being able to make appointments within certain guidelines, within certain legal parameters, not overstepping those boundaries. Most city managers make appointments in accordance with the adopted rules and regulations of the city. Most cities have nepotism policies written into their municipal code, sometimes in the charter, although more rarely. And so I would challenge you, just because your perspectives are born on based on your experience, and that's a normal, natural thing. I think the thing is we also have to think in terms of, 100 years from now, hopefully the same people who are in office today are not going to be there, because, I don't know many people who live to 200 years anymore.
The mentality is still going to be there.
Passed down from generation to generation.
Do you have other questions or comments? Or?
Yeah, I do. As a matter of fact, talking about in Germany, in the 19th century, they had the same problem with civil service. Mm-hmm. It became so complex that it didn't even work anymore.
Right.
But even today, Socialist countries, communist countries, democracies, they all have civil service. England, France, they were some of the first to go from, you know, the royal appointment to the civil service concepts.
I don't think anyone's suggesting getting rid of civil service. No one's suggesting that that should go away. I think the question is, where's the best place to talk about how the civil service will be conducted? And that's really the question that the committee is struggling with. And I, what I hear you saying is you think the best place is in the charter itself.
Because if it's an ordinance, it can be changed by four council people.
Understood. Yeah. Understood.
At least that's my opinion.
Yeah. Any additional comments? Questions? Well, thank you very much. That was very informative.
Well, my pleasure. If you have any other questions, Rebecca knows how to get in touch with me. I'm here almost every other Tuesday for the Charter Committee, and we'll be until they're done with their work. So again, thank you for your time. Dennis, if you, I'll just either wait outside or come back at 10:30.
If you want to get it over with now, I'll bring this.
We're almost done.
Oh, yeah. Don't you have closed session?
Yeah,
but
I don't believe we have any closed session.
We don't have any closed session yet. Oh, all right, then I'll just hang here.
Yeah, please. Okay, moving on to item A7, monthly report from the chief examiner.
So just briefly, in your packets you had the monthly report for August, providing you with an update of activity in the department with 14 eligibility lists having been issued with 224 candidates being certified. We had 8 recruitments that remained in progress at month end, and the average days in civil service for those recruitments was 9 working days. And those eligibility lists issued to a number of different departments, as you can see in your report. I also wanted to bring to your attention that there was an error in the July report, which has been corrected. The distribution for the 9 eligibility lists, that didn't change. There was a correction with the water department. There were actually 4 eligibility lists that were issued with them. For those of you that stayed with the council meeting last night, forgive me if it would be redundant, but I did want to bring to your attention that council did make the determination last night that they would be extending funding for Sabita for 3 additional months. That means that there will be extension notices issued to the impacted employees that have received layoff notices effective October the 1st. That date will change.
I've forgotten how many employees, Rebecca, with Sabita.
We have, I'll have to go back to
Number. Okay.
It's around 11 of them total that are remaining in total. So I can give you that breakdown next time
Fine. Sorry, I just had forgotten.
Been prepared with the actual list for you. But we have a number of part-time and full-time employees that are impacted. So we'll be proceeding with that next step for them.
Okay.
Any other questions that you have regarding activities? Okay.
I would ask for a motion that the activity report for August 2015 and the personnel action summary report for September 8, 2015 be received and filed. If I can have the motion.
So moved, Chair.
A second?
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Our next item is item A8, closed session. We have no closed session today. And our last item, item A9, adjournment. I would ask for a motion that the meeting be adjourned to the regularly scheduled meeting of October 13th, 2015. If I can have that motion.
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, you know, you had an interesting first meeting.
Yeah. I want to listen and learn and then
Sorry, operation.
Well, at least you didn't have a hearing.